Welcome to the Awesome Non-Speakers Podcast, which used to be called Awesome Autism Tools. I'm so excited about this new name. It reflects more clearly the heart of what I care so much about: connection, presumed competence, hope, and expression for non-speakers, unreliable speakers, and their families. I'm so glad that you're here. Today, you get to hear an interview I did with Jane, who is the brother of Jay, who I interviewed his mom earlier in the podcast. And I was so excited to find out that Jane had been doing Qigong with Jay for over a year when I mentioned it to Emma. And that just blew my mind, since I had recently started doing it with one of my other clients. And the changes have been positive. And I was just so excited someone else had experienced that as well and been inspired to try it. Jane also shared awesome insights about being a sibling of a non-speaking autistic brother and one of her favorite tools for working with people on the spectrum. So sit back and enjoy this interview, and I hope it inspires you. I shared last week on a podcast episode about Qigong and how it's helped me and how I was inspired to try it with my client. Okay, I'm so excited to have Jane here today on this interview. And I actually interviewed her mom earlier, so it's just such an honor to have you here today. And I'd love it if you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your journey as being a sibling of an autistic person.
Yes, thank you. Hi, I'm Jane. I'm glad to be here. And yes, my mother is Emma, and I am the older sister of Jay. And to introduce myself a little bit, I live in Salt Lake City with my husband. I'm a yoga instructor. Previous to that, though, I was working as the operations manager for a spellers clinic in San Diego. So many non-speaking autistics are spellers, like my brother Jay. And so I worked in a clinic that taught spelling as communication for non-speakers, and that gave me a lot of exposure and education in terms of what the non-speaking autistic experience is and also the mechanics and the why behind spelling. My brother was adopted into our family when I was 8 years old, and so I was a little bit older but also still a child when my brother joined our family. So I know you had asked about my journey as a sibling of an autistic person. And it's changed throughout the years, obviously. You know, I was a child when my brother was adopted, and so it was interesting as I reflect back on how my parents explained to me the situation or you know, his condition, his physical condition, struggling to understand that as a child. And I'm the youngest of all of my siblings, and so I didn't have a neurotypically developing younger child to compare, I guess, if that's the right way to say it. But I remember just loving my brother as soon as he joined our family. And it's kind of funny. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Wonder, about the child who, I believe, I don't know if he has a disability, but the older sister in that movie, she has this rebellious attitude towards her family. She is seeking more attention from her parents. She feels a little bit out of the orbit of the family's sphere, I guess. And I remember watching that and thinking, I didn't resonate with that at all when I was growing up. I really felt like it was doing something important, and our family was doing something important by Jay being a part of our family and taking care of his needs in the way that his body needed them. There's also another side of that also as well, though, of sort of an abjugation of my own needs or of my own awareness of, again, what I need. And so I have had to mature that understanding of my role in the family as not just, you know, a servant or to be of service to the rest of the family, but also holding a place. But I still really value the lessons that I learned about caring for people who are different from you, about understanding different perspectives on life, different abilities. And, you know, our family is Christian, and so also this sense of Christ-like service in this deep and profound way, I think, has had a lasting impact on how I view the world and what my values are.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Thank you I love that. What have been some of the most rewarding moments for you? And also, what have been some of the most challenging moments for you?
Yep. They both are there, right? We go through both. In contemplating this question, I think there's like this maybe unspoken debate in the world about whether truth is relative or truth is universal. And I have this middle line approach where I think that there is true things in the world, solid things in the world that we can rely on, but I think that they're three-dimensional. And it takes multiple perspectives in order to understand what that true thing is. You know, my nervous system interprets the world in one way. And someone who's autistic has a nervous system that works very differently and interprets the world and experiences the world in another way. And being able to access communication between these two experiences is profoundly invaluable in that I get access to another perspective on this true thing that we are all experiencing called reality. And I think that's been one of the most rewarding things, is having exposure to someone else who experiences the world differently. Learning about my brother's physical experience, learning about my brother's spiritual experience, and how that has helped me understand my world and myself and the people around me. And I think it's made me more compassionate and more open. And that's incredibly rewarding, because when you're compassionate and open, you have greater relationships and you feel better. So I think that's how I would answer the rewards question. In terms of challenges, I would say it's changed over the years, for sure, as my relationship with Jay has changed. But one thing I would say now that I think about is there's a lot of uncertainty in our relationship, because Jay's communication is, he doesn't get to communicate physically all the time whenever he wants, right? It is a great physical toll on him and his communication partner to sit down and spell something. And so I find myself, when I'm interacting with him, asking myself, how do I behave? You know, I'm not getting feedback, direct physical feedback from him that's influencing my behavior. And so I'm asking myself, how do I behave? How do I react? Am I being a good sister? Does he like me? Do I like him? You know, and there's just this space of no feedback, and that uncertainty can be unsettling for someone who wants to be a good person. But as, again, I've grown up and matured, I'm learning to be confident with acting on what I know now and being okay that there are things that I don't know. And when I learn them, I'll change my behavior. But for now, just doing the best that I can with the communication that we do have and the feedback that I do get. And then also just, you know, knowing that I know what's right. And if it ends up being wrong somehow in the future, I can change that and I can change my behavior. But I do have moments, going back to the rewards, I guess, I do have moments where I do get a glimpse of how our relationship feels in this physical world. For example, you know, I remember in high school, I would play guitar and Jay would be on the bed. I'd be sitting on the edge of the bed and Jay would come up to me and just put his face right up to the guitar strings. And that was that felt very affectionate to me. And that helped me in my relationship with him. And so there are glimpses and there are moments that are precious.
I love that. I think that's really important to realize that as neurotypical humans, mm-hmm. we take communication for granted. I can like read your facial expressions. Yeah. I can speak to you or ask you a question if I'm unsure. And often people that are on the spectrum, and especially if they're a non-speaker, to communicate is so challenging. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to have a relationship that kind of transcends that mm-hmm. is super challenging and also then has some hidden rewards to it.
Totally.
So I love how you explained that. So thank you. Okay, so one thing that got me so excited is with one of my clients that's a non-speaker, he let me know he wanted to do Qigong with him. And I was like, okay, because that's something that I've been doing. And I mentioned that briefly to your mom, and she's like, oh, Jane does that with Jay. And I'm like, what? And like, my mind was blown. So I want to know what inspired you to do Qigong with Jay, and tell me about that.
Yeah. So I began a yoga teaching instruction program over a year ago, and at my local yoga studio. And as part of that, I was just going to as many classes as possible at the studio. And one that they offered was Qigong. And so I went to this practice and absolutely fell in love with it. I felt in that class there was a real connection between body and spirit that this practice was able to access in a way that other spiritual practices I had done hadn't. And not that those are inadequate, but just I feel like every spiritual practice is another tool. And we're filling out all of our ways that we can, you know, access the spirituality or reconnect, integrate our spirit and our body. And that experience made me think of Jay, because I know from my experience in the Spellers community that there is a mind-body disconnect that many autistic non-speakers are experiencing, to where they feel like they cannot control their motor movements. Apraxia, the inability to control their motor movements, is something that they deal with, and that affects their communication, whether that be the fine motor through their speech or through typing or gross motor even. And that got me thinking about Jay and wondering if he could benefit from this practice. At the same time, my yoga instructor, she was telling us that, I think it was only a year or so ago before I heard this story, that she was paralyzed from the waist down because she had been in a car accident. And she was telling that story, and I thought to myself, this can't be true. I've seen you do handstands and the most crazy flexible things I've ever seen anyone do. And I was thinking, how could she have been paralyzed a year ago? And she told us, she said, meditation helped me regain my mobility in my lower half. She said, I would talk to my spine, and I would talk to my legs, and I would talk to my feet and ask them to heal or recover. And that, again, tipped me off to this mind-body connection that was happening. Then, sorry, I'm telling you this whole long tale of how
I love it.
I went to another Qigong class, and the teacher was giving us these exercises, and he would give modifications. He says, you know, if you can't bend your knees that low, do it less. And he said, even to the point of if you just visualize yourself doing these, that you will get the same benefits as if you were doing them physically. And again, that made me think of my brother Jay, because I know that he struggles with controlling his body, but he can visualize himself doing this. And perhaps that will help him, you know, connect his mind and body in a way that will advance his communication. And then finally, I'll just say this fourth thing that made me think about this was I was taking a course from Dan Siegel, he's a clinical psychologist, but also a researcher. And he developed this field called interpersonal neurobiology. And essentially the premise of his field and what he believes is that all illnesses, all disease, all struggles, all difficulties, all obstacles come from a disintegration between the different parts of the body and the mind. And so again, that was pointing me to perhaps Jay could benefit from a practice of integration, integrating the body and the mind. And so I said, let's do Qigong together. And so we were on Zoom, and I play a YouTube Qigong video, and we do that together. We share screen, and that's our practice.
Yeah, that's great. And so you're doing it along with the YouTube video, mm-hmm. and he's just watching, mm-hmm. apparently, hopefully doing it in his head, right? Yes. Like that's mm-hmm. your intention, is he's just imagining doing it. Mm-hmm. And so my question to you is that, have you noticed any benefits? Like, have you noticed if it's made a difference for him by doing this Qigong with you?
Jay does seem more regulated since we've started doing these Qigong sessions. But going back to kind of what I said about the uncertainty, it's hard to pinpoint what variables have what effects, right? And I think as our body gets older, you know, we mature and we slowly gain more control, or the weather can affect regulation. Other things happening, diet, relationships, it all affects regulation. And so it's really hard to pinpoint Qigong as a certain, as one variable going on in his life right now. But I like to think that it helps.
Yeah, for sure. It's your intention too, right?
Yes.
And you're connecting while you're doing it. Mm-hmm. For my client that I'm doing it with, his family noticed a difference almost immediately.
Wow.
And I continue to do it every morning because I'm doing it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, like it's time for Qigong class. And I just imagine his energy and his friends, actually all the daily people I work on certain people every day. Like, I'm just, if you want to come, come. And we do exercises. But I know for him specifically, his parents have noticed a difference. So again, you're right. There's so many things that go into play, but why not? It can't hurt. Right?
Absolutely. And the other thing is, I don't see Jay all the time, every day as well.
Right. So. Sure. So you do it about once a week with him?
We do it twice.
Oh, okay.
Twice a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I love that. I think that's so awesome. Okay, so my final question for you, the name of the podcast is Awesome Autism Tools. So what's one of your awesome tools that you think people should try? Mm-hmm.
That's a really good question. I guess my answer depends on what is your goal. You know, I think that there can be, well, I'll back up and say this. When I worked at the spelling clinic, there was a non-speaker who was spelling, and the question that he was answering was, in your life, do you need more tolerance for how you behave differently? In your social spheres, would you like people to tolerate your behaviors more, or would you like help to change those behaviors? And I really appreciated his answer. He said, I need both. In order to be a part of a social group, you need to both differentiate and link. You need to change your behavior in order to be a part of the social group, but also that social group needs to understand where you're coming from and the challenges that you face and accept that in some ways. So it's both. And so when we think about autism tools, if we're talking about mitigating some of the behaviors that could be seen as a struggle or some legitimate struggles with the physical body that autism brings, in my family's experience, diet has been a huge help in terms of mitigating some of the struggles with Jay's body. I couldn't tell you what each autistic person needs in terms of their diet, but I know that that's something that's out there in the world that a lot of people know about. But then reflecting inward in terms of myself and my challenges that I face in my relationship with Jay, I think the number one tool would be a mental mindset of presuming competence, which again, I know is talked about, but it will take you miles farther. If you look at the person in your life with autism as someone who knows what's best for them, who is behaving in a way that they are trying to be virtuous and good, that they are mentally and intellectually capable, socially and emotionally as well, and speaking to them, I mean, this sounds so simple, but speaking to them as if they're in the room. That was really hard for me. I did not do that growing up. I did not speak as if Jay was in the room. And that's something that I lament. I mean, I don't blame myself. I didn't know better. None of us did, right? But speak to them as if they're in the room. Don't speak to them in a baby tone. Decrease the pitch of your voice. Literally, just these little tools. And show dignity and respect to this person. And I think that that goes miles for your relationship. Even if you aren't getting direct feedback that it is, take the word from those who have done this before that it is doing miles for a relationship to treat every person in your life, not just the non-speaking autistics, with respect and dignity.
Yeah, that's really great. Thank you. I think that is so important and such a great way to end this. It's like just knowing that we're all doing the best we can, and let's treat each other with respect and dignity is powerful. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening today. If this episode was helpful, please share it with a friend. And remember to sign up for my Very Awesome Friends newsletter to get access to the private podcast and other helpful resources. I'd love to stay connected with you there.